About 6,000 years ago, give or take, God started communicating with man. The reason God started communicating with man about 6,000 years ago is about 6,000 years ago, give or take, God created man and started us on this planet. What I want to do today is we've spent the last year and 4 months or so traveling through the Bible, and then we've spent the last month and a half jumping off that track and doing all sorts of Christmas stuff, right? So how many of you guys happen to remember what I preached about last week? Yeah, like two of you. Whatever. You just listened to the podcast this afternoon, didn't you? Or yesterday. See, here's the thing. We hardly remember what happened last week, so there's no way I can expect to travel back into the journey here, jumping into the end of the book of Judges, if we have no idea kind of what's going on early. So kind of like what they do with the shows when they come back, which, by the way, they're not going to come back until next fall because the writers still aren't back. So good luck on that if you're looking forward to seeing a show this spring. They come back at the end of a long period and say, here's how it all plays out, just so you know. So what I'm going to try and accomplish this morning is in about 28 minutes, I'm going to try to take you through the big picture real quick to recap where we've come from. Then I'm going to close out the book of Judges so that we can step in next week into the next part of history, okay? So we're going to start 6,000 years ago, and we're going to look at three specific things: the historical context, the geographical context, and the spiritual context of God working with humanity from the beginning of Genesis to the end of the book of Judges. So buckle your seatbelt, sit back, shake your head for a second, because here we go, and it's going to be fast, so hang with me, all right? Okay, so God begins in the very beginning of the book of Genesis with what? Do you guys remember? How does the book of Genesis start? In the beginning, that's good, that's cute, but what's right after in the beginning? Okay? In the beginning, God did what? He created, that's right. So God starts right off the bat in the book and he says, listen, in the beginning I created, and I created this whole deal, this whole universe, everything, and at the pinnacle of it all, I placed into a garden that we know as the Garden of Eden, man and woman. And woman came last, she was the ultimate pinnacle. So woman, good luck on that, that's awesome. So cool. So man and woman are in the garden, and God starts communicating with humanity right there. And this is what he communicates in the book of Genesis early on. He communicates a couple of things. One, I am creating you to have relationship with me. God walked with man and woman in the garden. He came and had tea with them, hung out with them, chilled with them. It was awesome. If they needed God, they just ring a bell and God would come. I'm just kidding. They didn't ring a bell, but God would just be there for them whenever he needed to. And God communicated a second point to humanity through his actions. He said that when I created man with a very specific intent to have strong relationship with me and to live in paradise. That was what God's intent for humanity was. Relationship with him, living under his protection, under his sovereign hand, and in a place that is absolutely paradise. What is paradise? A place where every need is taken care of, where we have nothing we want for, nothing we fear, nothing we're ashamed of, nothing that affects us in any way except for good. And that's where man started. At the same time, we find out in the story of Scripture that right at this time, God created the heavens and then he created the earth. And when he created the heavens, he created a race of angels. Angels that knew and worshiped God in this place called the heavens. And the angels, there was one particular angel, Lucifer, who God raised up to a great place. And Lucifer started becoming prideful and started thinking to himself, I can do this better than God. And so Lucifer stepped from I can do this better than God to I can be God. And so Lucifer stepped in, recruited a third of the angels, and they attacked God's kingdom. Little did they know that God is the creator and sustainer of all life. And so God went, are you kidding me? I mean, what exactly are we trying here? And they were cast out from heaven. And from that point on, that enemy wanted nothing more than to hurt God. And the best way to hurt God was to hurt his creation. So the enemy stepped into the Garden of Eden, to the paradise, where God had communicated everything is good, everything is for your benefit, everything is perfect, everything is right. And he whispered this to humanity. This place you live in, this is bondage. This place you live in, this is captivity. See, what God wants for you is ignorance. He wants you to believe that you're happy and that everything's good and that everything's wonderful and that you're safe and protected. I kind of feel like you want to look at Adam and Eve and go, psh, look around. It was good and perfect and awesome and you lacked for nothing. But as he whispered and said, see, there's something better than this. If you do it your way, if you choose your stuff, if you follow me into the freedom that I live in. See this body? It's incredible. I mean, a snake, you can't get any better than that. I mean, there were so many signs. And Eve went, ooh, I could know more than God. Oh, that'd be cool. So Eve and Adam ate of a fruit that God had said not to, and they chose their way. And when God returns, humanity moves out of the Garden of Eden and moves into a place where sin is part of their lives. Let me just show you something real quick. Wow, did I leave my pen down here? Excuse me. Whoop. See this map up here? Not that one, this one. Okay, just so you know, this is Jerusalem right here. This is the Mediterranean Sea. Egypt hangs out right down here. So this is kind of, you know, this whole modern day Israel, Iraq, Iran, that, and Egypt down here, and then back over this way, is here is Babylon that sits over here, not today, obviously, but back then. The Garden of Eden was created where the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers come together, which is kind of in the Babylonian area. It's kind of back over here. So this is where creation begins, right? Geographically speaking, we're looking historically at about 4,000 BC before Christ. So actually 3,950 to be more exact. And creation begins right here with Adam and Eve. They leave the garden, and after they leave the garden, God begins the process of saying, okay, I am now going to step in and become your redeemer, your redemption. You see, redemption was unnecessary in paradise. But once we stepped out of paradise, God changed his communication from, I want you to live in paradise, to, I'm going to get you back to paradise. Okay, so God is shifting spiritually now to, this is everything communicated is going to be about the path back to paradise, not the path in paradise. So humanity starts about 130 years after Adam and Eve leave the garden. We have the birth of Seth, one of their sons. Seth is born 130 years into this, and then over the next 700 years or so, we see the birth of several interesting people, but we also see the beginning in the first five chapters of Genesis of the breakdown of humanity. We bump into people like Enoch. You guys remember this guy? Enoch was the guy that God said he walked with God, and then he was no more. I love that. Enoch's walking along one day. Him and God are such good friends that God just goes, you know, this whole earth-heaven thing is just bugging me. Come here. And Enoch was no more. Enoch didn't die. God just took him. So you have these men, Methuselah's in there, and a couple of other extraordinary stories between this degradation of humanity. But we see something very interesting happen. Over the next 1,000 years, as Adam's generation becomes older and older, and Adam starts having more kids, Adam and Eve, we see the birth of all these. We get to about 875 years after creation. So we're sitting now at 3070 BC. We have the birth of a guy called, Lamech. I thought it was Lamech. Okay, we have a guy called Lamech. You happen to know who Lamech was? He was the father of Noah. You know that name, right? So Lamech is born. He's a faithful man. Noah is born after Lamech. And as Noah grows up, we start getting a picture of humanity and what's happening, what's being communicated. We're still sitting in this area right over here. Everything's kind of settled around here. And humanity, in its entirety, it's still one unit. There's no nations. They have started getting so bad that they start fighting each other. They start beating each other down. They start wars and violence and killing and murder and all this stuff starts happening. And slowly but surely, over just about 1,000 years of generations, you start seeing the results of sin take their full force on humanity. There comes a point where it gets so bad that humanity is about to self-destruct. I mean, all that's left, literally, the Bible says, the only faithful family on the planet was Noah and his kids. That was it. Everybody else, sin had done its thing, and they had kind of lost all sense of God and all sense of wisdom, and they were just doing their own thing, and their own thing was leading to destruction. So humanity was about to self-destruct, wipe itself off the planet of the earth, and God begins this whisper to say, I will do whatever it takes to save humanity. I will do whatever it takes to redeem humanity from self-destruction. And what happens? God takes a little family, a faithful family, pulls them onto a boat, and he says, listen, you guys hang out there. I got to clean up something. And he cleans up what was inevitably going to self-destruct just a few years later. And he wipes out the evil that had infiltrated so badly into the hearts of man. You and I can never know how dark man's heart had gotten at that time. Only God can know that. And God wouldn't have made that decision unless there was no other way. And so he pulls Noah out and he saves humanity through a family. And he starts from scratch with a faithful man and his faithful family. And God knows that sin's going to begin its work again, but we got a fresh start. So Noah begins, and we see this all begin to happen after the flood. We're looking at about 1,600 years after creation at about 2290 BC. We're done with the flood, and we begin to walk down a little while later. Generations happen over a few hundred years, and suddenly humanity, in all of its glory, gets to a place where, starting with this neat little family that was full of God's glory still in many ways because we're still so close to creation, all the technological advances that man can have, all the thoughts and the creativity that God had put in us starts coming to fruition. And in a few generations, man is building and man is discovering and man is doing what we do best, what God created us to do, which was to pursue this world so we can find God in the midst of it all and come to be an absolute wonder of Him, except that because of sin, that changes from wonder for God to wonder of self, right? And what happens? Man gets together and says, you know what? As good as we are, we could build something so big, so high, so extraordinary that it would rival the gods and we would be right up there in heaven. We will make our own way from here to God. Does that sound familiar? I will find the path to God. I don't need God to find it for me. And they start building a tower. And they build and they build and the tower gets higher and higher. And as it gets to a point, God looks down and goes, I have got to whisper maybe a little louder this time about how this process works. See, once you walked out of paradise and you walked into sin, its destructive nature is going to eat away at you and you need my redemptive power to be able to survive, not your own path to God. And so God comes down to what we know as the Tower of Babel. And he takes the Tower of Babel and he destroys the tower. But God does another gracious thing for humanity. Knowing that humanity as a whole is going to constantly get back to this story of sin coming to a point of self-destruction, he creates languages and splits humanity in people groups by language. He confuses all the tongues and people scatter across the known world based on their language. So we're starting over here. We see people scatter up this way and go around that way. We see people scatter down this way. We see some people settle up along this coast. Some people scatter that way. Some people scatter this way. And so you start getting the Canaanites and the Amorites and the Philistines over here and the Canaanites and down here. We get into Egypt. Now, you know, in Egypt, what do they build in Egypt? They build the pyramids. You know, to this day, people are still fascinated by what happened during this time in history in Egypt because of their incredible advance in technology. But what did that people just come from? They just came from building a tower that was reaching to the heavens. These people knew what was going on. And so as the people group split, you see now for the first time nations form. And God begins to whisper this way. I'm going to split you now into nations so that as a single unit captured by sin, you will never be together so unified to take all of your force against me. Is God afraid of us? No. But we should be afraid of us because what God is most concerned about is that in our quest to destroy Him, we will ultimately destroy ourselves because that's exactly what happens. So God splits that, but God doesn't stop there. Just a little while later, we jump into about 1900 years after creation. So we're looking at about 2000 BC now, 2000 years before Christ. A man named Abraham is born, and he is born, see up here, right here? If you go 300 miles, follow that arrow right there, 300 miles up this way, right about here, there's a place called Haran. And Abraham is born in Haran, 300 miles that way. And God comes to Abraham in Haran and says to him, listen, I have a mission for you. I have a special purpose for you. I've split people into nations, but now I want to do something extraordinary for all of the nations because I want to begin to communicate to humanity, I am here to win you back to paradise. And so what God does is, the spiritual context there is that God takes Abraham and says, oh, we're going to do something that is going to change history together, and we're going to bring man back to me. The historical context is that God shows up in Haran and says to Abraham, I want you to leave with me. And Abraham goes, where do we go? And God says, just follow me. Geographically, God starts here and he pulls him down 300 miles this way. Abraham travels all the way down here to Shechem. He travels all the way to Egypt, and then he travels back up this way all the way to about this central area over here. During that time of travel through the story of Abraham, God begins to tell Abraham, here's my plan. See, I'm going to take you, just you, Abraham, and I'm going to build a nation out of you. A huge nation. And look up for a second. You see the stars? Look at the sand. You see the sand? You will not be able to count the amount of people that will come from your nation. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take that nation, Abraham, and I'm going to take you as a nation, and I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to redeem you, and I'm going to work with you. And when the rest of the world looks in at this nation, they're going to go, that's what it looks like to follow God. And the whole world will go, if I'm going to serve a God, I want to serve that God. And people will know that I love them. And so God tells Abraham, you're going to have a son. And Abraham goes, ha! That's funny, because I'm like 100. And Sarah, she laughs even louder because she was like 90. And God goes, oh, don't worry. When we're done with this story, man will never doubt again that I can do anything. And so God says to Abraham and Sarah, they're going to have a son. After a little while, Abraham gets discouraged. He takes his maidservant, and he has a son with her, Ishmael. And God goes, once again, let's try to explain this. You try and build a tower to get to me. You try to do things your way to find me. You're just going to mess it up. You just got to wait on me and trust me and be patient enough to follow my ways, and I'll lead you right into freedom. So he goes, that was not the way I wanted it done. I was actually planning to give you and Sarah a son. And so God does. And we have a man named Isaac who is born from Abraham and Sarah. Well, Isaac starts growing up. And you remember the story now. We're still in Genesis. Right about that time, God starts communicating through Abraham. And he says this, listen, I need you to take your son, bring him up and sacrifice him to me. And God, and Abraham takes his son up and he sacrifices him to God. And remember, we all kind of were shocked at that story. But God whispers and says, don't you dare drive that knife into Isaac's heart. And God begins to whisper to us the very opposite of what we think. He says, listen, number one, always be willing to lay down whatever it is you need to lay down when it's got to do with me. Because if you're not willing to do that, those things will become trappings and you will lose me in the mix. But second of all, know this, that when I ask you to lay something down, I will never ask you to lay it down just so I can have it. I ask you to lay it down to work with you, but you will always have goodness from me. I'm not going to take your son from you. God does not sacrifice Isaac. He saves him. And then God communicates to Abraham that I'm going to set up a covenant with you. And he begins the process of covenant with Abraham. And the covenant says, I will be faithful to you even when you are not faithful to me. And there we begin a beautiful story. Isaac grows up and he has two sons, right? Two sons, Esau and Jacob. Esau is the older. They are born in this area right here. Esau kind of moves back and forth this way, right down here, near this area right here. This is where Esau and Jacob go through that neat little thing where Jacob tricks Esau and steals away his inheritance. Remember that? So now Jacob becomes the son who inherits everything, and Esau loses out. But it was because of Esau's selfishness that that ends up happening. And the consequence of that is that Jacob becomes the line that we begin to follow instead of Esau. So Jacob, we see the line split now from Ishmael to Isaac. We follow Isaac. Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau. We follow them for a little while, and then we split off from Esau, and we follow Jacob. Jacob has how many sons? 12 sons, right? One of the youngest sons that he has is a guy named Joseph. Remember this? So Joseph is born right about this area right here, in this central area right here. And his brothers get all jealous, and they take Joseph, and there's a group traveling up here who travels through the land picking up slaves to head back down to Egypt. And they come through here, and instead of killing Joseph, they sell him into slavery. Joseph travels down into Egypt, and in Egypt, we find the story of Joseph where such terrible things happen to him. He tries to be faithful to God, and every time he tries, it seems like circumstances turn out for the worst. And God begins to whisper this to us spiritually. Sometimes when I ask you to do things, sometimes when I allow circumstances to play out in your life, some of them will be because of sin, some of them will just be because they're circumstances. You just got to hang in there and trust me, because sometimes it'll look like what I'm doing for you is not best, but it's always best. You've just got to trust me. And you see, Joseph trusted God. So though he found himself in prison, though he found himself in Potiphar's house, though he found himself in the worst moments, each time in that place, within that context, God created freedom for Joseph. And one day Joseph found himself in the courts of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said, I heard you interpret dreams. I've had one. And Joseph tells Pharaoh there's going to be a huge famine in the land, 7 years of famine, so bad that people will die. It may even wipe out the land. But before those 7 years, there'll be 7 years of great harvest. And if we in Egypt save our stuff, then during the 7 years of famine, we'll be fine. So guess what Pharaoh does? He puts Joseph in charge of the whole deal, becomes second in command of Egypt, and they begin to work with that. Turns out, during the 7 years of famine, Joseph's family, who was still living up here, their brothers traveled down to Egypt. Why? To get what? Food, because there was a famine. And during that whole journey, they discover that Joseph is their brother, and Joseph brings the dad down, and Jacob's there, and everyone's happy. And right here in Goshen, right over here, just next to Egypt, the 70 Israelis settle down and start building a family. Joseph dies. We end Genesis with the death of Joseph, and we travel right into Exodus, where we find out that the gap between Genesis and Exodus, over those few hundred years, something extraordinary happens. The leadership in Egypt realized that the growth and massive, incredible, supernatural growth of Israel could turn to be quite a problem or a really good thing. And so they decide to make it a good thing, and they put them to work, and they become slaves. Israel finds themselves enslaved down here by the Egyptians, and they cry out to their God. And they say, we're stuck. We need you, which is what humans tend to do when they get stuck. They cry out to God, which I would dare say sometimes the best places we can be is stuck, so we're not building towers that we shouldn't be messing with. And then God says, okay, I'm going to do something really cool. Before all this happened, there's a guy named Moses who is born. And Moses is born in about 1576 BC. So we're talking about 2,350 years after creation. You with me so far? Okay, Moses is born, but because of a problem during that time with the Pharaoh killing all the children, Moses gets put on a river, drifts into the princess's hands, and becomes a prince of Egypt. Moses, after a few years of living with Pharaoh and in the Pharaoh's courts, kills somebody and has to flee. He flees up across here to a place called Midian, which sits right down here, and he becomes a shepherd there for 40 years. 40 years is in obscurity, completely unknown, just a shepherd in the desert, and God shows up to Moses and says, I've chosen you to rescue the people. He grabs Moses, he brings Moses back, and we get the extraordinary part of the story where Moses comes and the people of Israel leave because of the great plagues that God caused for Pharaoh because of his stubbornness. They get to the Red Sea, Pharaoh's people chase after them, God parts the Red Sea, brings them into freedom, shuts the Red Sea on the Egyptians, and then says to the people, guess where I'm taking you? And the people go, where? And God goes, oh, to the promised land, to paradise. Because you see, you're my people. Now here's the deal though. You've just seen what I can do. Obey me. Trust me. Follow me. When I tell you to step to the left, step to the left. When I tell you to step to the right, step to the right. Because there's a lot of big holes in between. And if you step on one of those, you're going to fall and you're going to get really hurt. So you got to trust me. Well, they travel all the way up here. And they get here and they're going to cross over. And before they cross over the Jordan River, they send spies in, 12 of them. Joshua and Caleb are two of them. They go into the land and the spies come back and say, we ain't going in there. There's giants in the land, big walls. And I feel like God must have wanted to come down and say, sit down for a second, Israel. Let's compare notes. You found a couple of big human beings in the land with a few big walls. I just parted the Red Sea, came in a cloud of fire, led you through the desert, and brought the greatest nation on the planet to its knees. Which part of this is confusing? And the people go, we're just scared. We don't want to do it. And God goes, okay, if you can't trust me, then we're dead in the water. No point in walking into paradise when you don't trust God, right? Because if you walk into paradise without trusting God, what's going to happen in paradise? You're going to just not trust him there, and you're going to find yourself right back outside of paradise. So God, for the sake of the nation of Israel, causes that generation to walk around for 40 years in the desert and die out, and he explains to people once again, when you don't follow me, people die. Not because I'm angry, but because that's the consequence of sin. You got to trust me, because sin is out to steal, kill, and destroy you. And if you don't trust me and stick with me, you're going to die. And so the people die out, and then we jump into the book of Joshua, and Joshua takes over, and he leads the people right through. We cross right over here. We hit Jericho. Boom. We smash Jericho, and the people split across the land over the next 24 years. They divide the land up, and they just conquer, conquer, conquer. And God says to them, make sure while you're conquering that you kill everyone that's in the land that is not part of me, or you get them out of the land, because, my friends, you have no idea how powerful sin is. It crouches at your doorstep, and at the second you think you've got it together, those temptations will call you, and you'll find yourself compromising in small ways, and then compromising in bigger ways, and then before you know it, you won't even know who I am, and you'll be lost again, and paradise will be lost again. Oh, but the people don't listen to God in the small details, because they go, you know, little things are not as big as big things. Big sins are bad, little sins are okay. And what happens? Over the next few generations right here in the land, we see the people just plummet into horror. And then we step into the book of Judges right out of the book of Joshua. In the book of Judges, we travel through Judges. And what does God do in Judges? Interesting that he uses this word judges, doesn't he? Because here in our society, oh, judgment is terrible, isn't it? I mean, even in church, I mean, as soon as you're judged, it's like, whoa, I'm judged, I'm leaving, I hate the place. And yes, there's a lot of unnecessary, stupid judgment that goes around. And we as people judge each other in ways where it's human judging human. Bad idea. Bad, bad idea. God told us, don't judge anyone, love everyone. I'll judge everyone and love them, but you leave the judging to me. But God also tells us that there is a version of judgment that is exactly the same translation as redemption or savior. Because this word, the book of Judges, when he raised up a judge, he raised up a redeemer. A judge. It was interchangeable, the word. And here's what the point was. When you are walking away from God and you're living your own way and you're building your own towers and you're all into idols and you're just having a blast and you're setting other things ahead of God, just pray that there will be someone that God sends into your life that is a redeemer, a judge, that comes in and says, What are you doing? Are you sure you want to do this? Don't you know where this takes you? I mean, come on. God leads us to life and freedom. Don't do this. Trust him even though it hurts now. Because trust me when I tell you, later on, you will pay the price for following God. It will be the price of freedom and love and life. Or you will pay the price for not. And I'm your friend. So yes, you might feel like I'm judging you, but I'm not. I'm here to rescue you. The judges come in, and that's exactly what they do. God allows nations. You get all sorts of nations. You got the Amorites over here and the Ammonites over here. You got the Philistines over here. You've got the Amalekites down over here. You got the Canaanites up here. And they all come in one at a time, and they take Israel captive. And every time Israel gets taken captive and gets ravished, God raises up a redeemer and sends a judge in. The judge beats down the enemy, brings Israel back to health, and says, now, here's the deal. God rescued you. He redeemed you. Learn your lesson. Because if you don't, you're just going to end up there again. See what God is communicating spiritually? Folks, God does not redeem us so we can just go and unredeem ourselves again. He redeems us so that we can start living his way, so that we can live freely. God's goal for us is paradise all the time, not paradise half the time, because half the time we'll keep walking out. And so here God goes and says, listen, here's the deal. I'm going to redeem you once again. And he sends judge after judge. In the book of Judges, we jump into a couple of things, just so you know. The book of Judges, we're talking now about, as far as time passing, we're looking at probably around 1426 BC. So we're looking at 2,500 years after creation. And we're in the book of Judges, and here's what happens in the book of Judges. We're talking about 325 years of reign for the judges. And these are the judges we catch. You're going to recognize some of these names. You ready? There were 14 judges, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar. Do you remember Deborah and Gideon? Okay, well, Deborah, right up here, this is where Deborah and Barak do that huge quest of conquering. That's up here. So that all happens up here. Several of the judges appear in here and conquer different nations. These are the nations they conquer, the Ammonites, the Amalekites, the Moabites, I mean, all these guys, the Canaanites. And so here's what happens. You get the 14 judges. You've got Deborah, Gideon, Tola, Jar, Jephthah, Isban, Elon, Abdon, Samson, Eli, and Samuel. Now, you guys haven't heard of Eli and Samuel yet if you've been tracking with me, because we haven't bumped into them yet. The book of Judges walks us through the stories of those judges, and every time the book of Judges says, hey, listen, just so you know, I'm after your redemption. I will rescue you no matter how many times you walk out on me. But quit walking out on me because it's just a waste of all of our time. And then Samson, the final judge in the book of Judges, comes out. You remember he kind of unredeems himself. He finds himself in the temple of the Philistines, blind, being an entertainer. He puts his hands on the big pillar in the center, shoves it over, and the entire thing comes down, kills all the Philistines. And God says to Israel, I've set you free now. Live free, please. Live my way. Over the next five chapters of the book of Judges, you're welcome to turn there. Go to Judges chapter 17 real quick, would you? I want you to open to it only because I'm not going to read it right now, but I want you to be prepared to read through this. I'm going to read one verse for you. In 17, it's on page 180 of our Bibles. There's a bunch of Bibles under the chairs. If you don't have a good Bible at home, take one of ours and keep it, please. In our Bibles, page 180, in Judges chapter 17, this is what happens. Watch this. In chapter 17, we meet a man named Micah, and Micah makes idols, and he starts creating idols. You see the degradation of humanity right there? In chapter 18, we see the pinnacle of this in verse 24. Look at verse 24 of chapter 18. Micah's talking, and he replied, you took the gods I made and my priest and went away. What else do I have? How can you ask what is the matter with you? You see where this has gotten to? We've gotten the people group of Israel that are so devastated in their sin that when you steal their little wooden gods and you take away their little wooden priest, they get all crazy and they go, what am I going to do? My whole life is lost. And God's going, what part of this is confusing? And then a terrible thing happens. In the next few chapters of Judges, you can read them if you feel like it, but you're going to read some gross stuff in there. Because in the next few chapters, we get a glimpse of some massive change in the nation of Israel. See, all the way through the book of Judges, God sent nations in and allowed them to take Israel captive. But this time, God didn't even do that because Israel started fighting themselves. Does this sound familiar? Are we back to where the flood was? Israel, the nation God has picked, starts beating down on each other. One tribe comes and ravishes another tribe. Another tribe steals stuff from this tribe. These guys get mad at these guys and they start fighting each other and they start self-destructing themselves. And at the end of the book of Judges, we have this perfect picture of what happens when you allow small compromises in your life and you stop following God and you start following you. And you start making those little changes where you go, well, I mean, this is a small thing. God'll save me. And before you know it, this is what you have on your hands. There was rape. There was murder. There were parents giving their daughters up to groups of men. It's terrible what was happening. Terrible. And it ends at the very end with the Benjamites going through a massive situation that was just so dark and so terrible that even Israel in this terrible state stepped back and went, oh, how could we let that happen? And we're left at the end of the book of Judges somewhat discouraged, going, wow, is this the world that we have? Is this where God has us? Where sin is so powerful that it just destroys. And then in 1 Samuel, we step into Eli and Samuel, the next two judges, where God once again redeems Israel. But right before we step into 1 Samuel, there's a little book right after Judges called what? The Book of Ruth. And let me tell you something about the Book of Ruth. It's kind of like the Book of Job in the middle of Genesis when humanity was just messed up and God sends us Job and goes, oh, but in a foreign land, there's a man named Job and he is incredible. And it kind of gives you that glimmer of hope like, yes, God is up to something, and Ruth is that story. Right here, he throws Ruth in the time of the judges and says, yeah, maybe the nation of Israel is completely falling apart, but there's this woman, Ruth. She's a foreign woman, and let me tell you her story, because it is probably the greatest story of love, redemption, loyalty, strength, and honor that you will probably read in all of the Old Testament. It is a beautiful story, but that is a story that we'll have to wait till next week. And next week, we will jump out of Judges into Ruth, and we will see what God is up to next. But now we know where God has brought us this far. And we know one thing. God continues to whisper to us today, my intention for you is paradise, but the only way from here to paradise is by following me and doing it my way. You try to do it your way, you're going to get lost on the way. Trust me. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your incredible word and for this incredible story. that we're unfolding in your word. Thanks for the men and women that you've used in this story to whisper to us that what this boils down to, God, is just trusting you and following you even when circumstances seem to point a different direction. God, remind us this day as we leave here that your love for us is so great that you will do anything to redeem us, and that your love for us is so great that your intent for us is paradise, and that paradise exists, God, ultimately when we leave this planet and find ourselves with you again. But even now on this planet, God, you intend for us to live in the fullness and goodness of your love. And help us to remember that as we trust you, as we follow you, as we walk through the circumstances of life, doing things in obedience to your word and to your ways, that that will lead us to paradise. Paradise here, living freely. God, help us to see you for who you are, the God of redemption, the God of goodness, the God of love, the God who is willing to do anything, to go to any length to save us. We love you, Jesus. Amen.